So welcome back to Microsoft's Virtual Academy. We're on Module 3, Enterprise Mobility Suite, and looking at hybrid identity using Azure in the cloud. I'm still Warren Shaw, I'm still the presenter. My background, 20 years or so in selling. That's the only thing I've ever known is how to sell IT. And I run around the world at the moment training salespeople. I'm very lucky being in over 60 countries and met the most amazing people being in sales. And I'm really passionate about people seeing sales as a career. But one of the things that we don't do very well is sell, funny enough. So these sessions are all about teaching us how to sell properly and not letting the pre-sales guys do all the hard work. And, again, my background's really that I've been pretty good at selling, but I think that what happens, and we spoke about it earlier with Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, is that good salespeople end up just being good salespeople. They never think about what it takes to being great. And it's really simple. It's about preparation. So we're going to spend some time today thinking about the preparation that you need to put in to having these types of discussions. You need to be really good at telling business stories and being relevant and sharing your expertise and how you've helped other customers in similar situations. And I still, maintain that it's really about understanding how to help the customer first and then selling later. If you can do that, you're going to be successful. And also, stay curious. Think about what your customer does. If they're a mining house, think about what processes and how difficult it is to get the ore out the ground so they can convert that into a metal, so they can sell that on the open market. It takes a lot for them to do it. So be curious about what your customers do, and you'll be very surprised at the kind of discussions that you have. And a little bit of background in my hobbies. I ride mountain bikes. I tend to try not to fall off them, but that happens every now and again. So I'm doing today in the studio with James, and James has had a lot of experience doing this, so no pressure on you today, James. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Thanks, Warren. My name is James Avenant. I've not had quite as long a career as you, but also in the IT industry for about 17 years. I started off with a BSc Computer Science Honours from RIU. And I've been around the IT industry in various jobs. I started off as a solution architect and focus on building solutions for customers, and then moved more into the sales side now later in my career. Currently, I'm the Partner Channel Development Manager, basically helping our resellers in terms of how they need to think about the transformation in their business models to lead with cloud. This is we've seen transformation in the IT industry every couple of years. I remember one of my first jobs in the IT industry was actually to move a system off a mainframe into the client server world and data warehousing. That was the hot concept around 1995, etc. And to some extent with cloud, some people say we've come full circle where we still again have this single solution in the cloud. But there's a lot of the cloud that is very different, and I think we're at the point where we're using the best of both worlds, best of management, control, security, etc. But then having the leveraging the infrastructure of a larger vendor so that we can save some costs. So very excited to be with you here and present this course. A little bit about myself. I'm partnered with Derek, and I have a little puppy at home that's keeping me up at night. And I love gardening, so the fact that he's constantly digging in the garden is a little bit of a problem for me at the moment. So, maybe managing IT is one of those things that I'm better at, because you can switch it off. Managing the puppy is a little bit more time consuming.
Yeah, it's actually, there's two interesting things you said there. Is that one, you actually got to migrate mainframe into the client server world. I never could get that right. So that must have been pretty epic. And then the other thing is, having a little puppy, so you must be really good at garden landscaping now as well. So, man of many talents. So today we're going to go through EMS, hybrid identity. As I've said in all the sessions, is that I'm a salesperson and I think in pictures. So I've created a little storyboard here of the pictures of what this means to me and how we can use this to drive the discussions and how we can tie this back into Pitch Perfect. So if you think about it today, more and more organizations are using the public cloud to enable software as a service to get the users out there to work on any device at any time, anywhere. And actually, right now we demand that. The business has to supply that to us. It's like a non-negotiable. And the reason why they're doing this is, because there's a very good business reason. It reduces their costs and it reduces the money that they're spending on the upgrades. But there's a caveat to this, James, because it does come with the issue around access and security.
100%. I think if you trust your server and you know that you've got a contained network and only the individuals that are inside of your building has access to that server, then more often than not the conversation is about how do I get a new employee to get access to the system. Once I start leveraging some of these external systems, I need to rather think about how do I keep people out of my system and how do I control. And that is absolutely what bring your own device and all of these concepts lead to, because you have to relax the absolute control and the containment a little bit to allow people to do their jobs, but you still want to maintain all of the controls and know who is connecting to your network at which times, etc. So that becomes quite a management challenge and a different way of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, for me, it became actually really real when I started thinking about myself as a user. I have applications, different usernames that I have to log into, multiple different applications. Some are on site, some are off site, some are in the cloud. And I've got to remember all my usernames and I've got to remember different passwords for everyone. And so I often get it wrong. And so guess what? That happens. I pick up the phone and I have to get my username reset. And I mean, the cost in that to some organizations must be huge.
Sure. And I mean, did you have them written down in a little black book that went lost at any point in time?
Unfortunately, embarrassing. Yes, I did. So yeah, that's a problem.
100%. So I mean, our organizations are very concerned about this, about knowing that the people that they've authorized are the people that can actually get access to the systems and support them in the use of the systems. And you don't want to go for a system that is very cumbersome, whether your individual needs to drive into the office to come and reprove themselves.
Who they are.
I remember when I did some contracting work, there was one of our major financial institutions where you have to reapply for access once a year, and you stand in this long queue and it takes 2 days for you to get productive because you have to revalidate your password and your access to the systems.
Well, it's interesting as well. You've got all this access to all these systems, but then it works the other way around. So I leave that organization. It's difficult for them to figure out where to switch you off and how many systems you actually did have access
100%.
To. So decommissioning you is as important as commissioning, I would imagine.
For sure.
And then you mentioned that you have this concern around always monitoring and making sure that there's no vulnerabilities. If there's any anomalies coming in, that you're checking and monitoring that. So as you said, public cloud, using the cloud can, from a management point of view, be fairly difficult.
Sure. I mean, public cloud stretches so wide. How do you know which are all the systems? And one of the things that creeps into a lot of businesses is a mix of commercial and consumer technologies. So in the commercial technologies, you can still say, well, it's a system that was provisioned and sanctioned by the organization. But how do you actually make sure that commercial system that you're in control of has all of the needs of the users covered, so that they don't spill over and start using consumer technologies in the business and create a risk for you as an organization?
Yeah, I mean, and talking about risk, I mean, you'll have a situation where you maybe have highly sensitive information, so you want another level of security on that. And so, something like multi-factor authentication, which could be as simple as getting a code to your phone, is required. And MFA makes a lot of sense, but there's a huge upfront cost requirement. It takes a lot of time, and then there's the ongoing costs of managing that and its complexity. So although it's great to have, it's not easily done, is it?
Sure. And I mean, you end up having these point solutions in your security armor, but each of them come with edges that have vulnerabilities. And how do you know that you've got one platform that actually manages everything that is running in your organization and everything is blanket covered for all of your users?
Well, that's brilliant, because that leads me exactly to where Microsoft can help, because what I understand is that there is one set of credentials that you can use with EMS be it for your on-premise applications or for your software as a service applications. I believe there's over 1,800 that we support just straight out of the box. So now you've got one single sign-on.
That's brilliant. I mean, systems such as Office 365 that leverages the EMS, that's one of the top asks that we get on Office 365 is how does it integrate to make sure that my users can log onto the system seamlessly.
Well, what I was interested to see is how Microsoft have also opened this up to people that you consider as competitors, Google, Salesforce, Citrix, etc. I think that's amazing.
Spot on. So as I mentioned before, I mean, we know that there's many systems out there. And yes, we try to provide a fit, functionality fit inside of the solutions that we support. But, you know, Microsoft is one vendor. There are many vendors out there. I think from a security perspective, it's important that you have, again, everything covered under one umbrella from a security perspective.
So if I'm right in understanding, with EMS, I'd actually be able to do my own password resets. I wouldn't have to phone a call center. I mean, this would have a significant reduction in the number of calls that you'd have to make. I know we're using a case study just now that comes up with some pretty horrific numbers and what this can cost. So I can do my own password resets with EMS?
Yes, I mean, one of the things that's brilliant about this, I mean, we were talking about the case, I mean, a lot of South Africans will be familiar with UNISA. They have in the order of 1.2 million students that are doing short courses with them. And recently we implemented a system with them. And one of the major considerations were what happens if all 1.2 million students phone me in January to know what their password is. So they had to have a way to actually distribute a password that is a temporary password and the student can go in and go and self-service.
Well, I can imagine that must have been a headache just thinking about that happening. And it probably does. I mean, that phone kind of must ring off the hook. So
absolutely.
Again, Microsoft to the rescue. And again, I think, you know, we spoke about it's great to have your credentials in one place, but also it works for when you decommission someone. So you can simply decommission them off-premise or on-premise. It's as simple as that. And you can also enable MFA, so via the telephone, via your mobile device, or even on your tablet. So MFA codes can be done that way.
Spot on. And I mean, you mentioned decommission, but there are some instances that happen where you actually want to decommission a specific device or a specific user for another reason. I mean, unfortunately in South Africa, theft of endpoint devices is not an unlikely scenario. And often businesses are very worried about the data that is stored on that endpoint device. It could be corporate espionage that the device got stolen. It could be a case of just negligence or otherwise just pure theft. But in all those cases, you want to know that there's none of your company's secrets that was left exposed that could fall into different hands.
Yeah, no, that would be a disaster. So absolutely, that's fantastic. The other thing that I was quite interested in seeing is because, you know, this is fairly complicated to manage, you know, Microsoft provides then a whole set of reports based on machine learning about activity, spotting trends, vulnerabilities, anomalies that are happening, and those reports can be sent to you to make sure that you're not at any risk. Maybe those vulnerabilities of phones getting stolen and potential security risks.
100%. And I think the platform allows you to manage, but quite often for the risk officer, they're someone that's not from an IT background that needs to actually look at these reports. So the system needs to go a long way into helping them actually do the management and do it easy. Because security could be a very dry subject. Yes. And a lot of people will actually skirt away from it, even though that it's so fundamental that it should be discussed at board level in a lot of businesses.
So, you know, once they've got the policies and procedures in place, I think we were talking about it earlier, it also creates an opportunity for some of our partners to manage that.
Absolutely.
On behalf of the customers.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a customer that may not be, I mean, able to drive these tools or have the interest to drive these tools, you could, as a partner, create a service opportunity where you can actually step in and become a risk compliance solution vendor that can cover it end to end, all the way from the actual solution cell to using these tools, implement and operate. And I think in the face of the POPI Act that is coming in soon, we have a case where the business needs to be concerned about their end user data. So again, showing there's an auditability aspect here where the business need to show that they went to lengths to protect the customer's data from leaking out of their organization. And what greater way than to actually prevent leaks in your organization altogether?
Yeah. So you can actually prove it. You've got an audited trail that you can prove. That's really, really interesting. And I think the other thing is that it's not maybe that they don't have the inclination to monitor their own, they just might not have their own skill in-house to do it. So
sure.
Partner becomes a great partner opportunity.
And it's about thinking differently about security. I mean, we said earlier that in the days of client server, you know that your network's contained, etc. A lot of businesses, especially smaller businesses out there, still think that the physical security or your physical premise contains all of your information. But your employees are very creative at sharing data. They're very creative at using thumb drives, using disks, to legitimately have access to the data from their homes or from a customer site, etc. But not thinking about the risk, not thinking about what happens to that data, whether that thumb drive gets lost, whether the phone gets stolen, etc. So you have to think about security wider than just your physical premise. And especially when you're now in the cloud, you have to think about the whole cloud solution as part of your physical premise, an extension of that physical premise that needs to be protected.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not because they're doing it out of malice. It's just because users will find a way of moving that information around.
Spot on. I mean, I think the consumerization of IT, we often talk about bring your own device as consumerization of IT, but there's also aspects around the use of Facebook, social tools, some of the file sharing tools that are out there in a consumer world that users have grown up with. I mean, we're talking about the millennials coming into the business place. And they've gotten used to collaborating in a different way while they were at school, at varsity, etc. So they bring those experiences into the business. And if the business contains them too much, constrains them too much in how they do their daily job, they will find creative ways to continue with their collaboration, etc. That they're used to. So again, for the business owner, it's important to put systems in place that meet the user's needs, helps them collaborate in a safe and compliant fashion.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, from EMS's point of view, you've got Azure Active Directory Premium that's going to enable the single set of credentials and the single sign-on. You've got Windows Intune that's going to help with the devices, and then you've got Azure RMS to manage rights management for some of the sensitive content that you have out there. They're the three capabilities that build up EMS?
100%. And I mean, for especially smaller businesses, you may not have the ability to manage all of these servers on-premise. So again, putting those servers in the cloud or having the services available to you from the cloud is enterprise-grade services that's been built with security in mind that businesses of all sizes can get access to. Specifically, for our resellers out there, we often think about SMB customers out there as the number of PCs that you used to sell to them or the number of servers that you used to sell to them. But really, with the cloud, we have a much, much bigger concept of what is the nature of that business. Is it a shipping company, for instance, that has highly sensitive documents? Even if it's only a 4 or 5 man operation, they may be trading in the millions. And for them, their company documents are extremely sensitive. So they would be a type of customer that would be very keen on looking at a solution that has the security watertight.
So great. So looking back at the slide, this is kind of almost like my story that I can use to start having a discussion that's going to drive EMS in our customers. So there's no doubt that we have a very compelling story. Now, let's figure out how we're going to go and do that.
Absolutely. And I think it's very important that we demystify all of these technical things that we've now spoken about. When you walk into the customer's presence, you want to be able to pitch it in a business context.
Absolutely. So let's think about using Pitch Perfect as a model in doing that. We've spoken about it in the other modules, but really what I'm trying to get across from a Pitch Perfect point of view is let's think about the preparation that needs to go in place. So what is the preparation we need to do beforehand? So one of it is knowing what EMS does. And that simple storyboard can be enough to start giving you some context into having that discussion. I think some of the other preparation that needs to happen, you know, and preparation doesn't happen in the elevator between the 7th floor and the 10th floor. This happens before you go to the meeting, is who's the right industry, who are the right people to speak to, And what are the business pains or the business drivers you're trying to address? And if you look at the pitch perfect little picture here that I've used to indicate the whole process, is first of all, do your preparation. And then the very first step after that, when you've got the meeting, is create business rapport. Now, it's always amazing for me when I go out on calls with salespeople that a lot of the rapport is often about the weather or the rugby. And you know, I'm seeing more and more today, especially when you're meeting with senior people, not that they just want to get down to business, but they want you to demonstrate that you know something about their organization. So if you're going to go call on a mining house, they're going to want to know that you know what's happening to the price of platinum or gold or whatever they're mining. They want you to know that you understand some of the challenges that they face around health and safety, around industrial action, and so it goes. So I'm finding it's really useful to create business rapport rather than just how is the fishing and how's the rugby, because they immediately sense that this is a different type of discussion from a salesperson.
Correct. And I think because we have sold licenses in the past instead of selling solutions, again, the person that you're talking to is waiting for the conversation to change from this nice discussion about the weather into, okay, here is the number of licenses that you need, please sign on the bottom line. So if you can find a way, as you say, to rather lead into the business conversation and test for some of these questions that you've prepared in terms of this the business need, you'll have an angle that you can refer to back to once you're actually in the conversation.
Yeah, and I think it really goes back to this point that I was saying in the beginning. It's really about, you know, having the intention to help first before you sell. And, you know, embarrassingly enough, my sales technique in the past used to be, well, here's the licenses. Surely you need the licenses, buy the licenses. And I can't imagine that was very pleasant. So let's think about how we do this better. So we create the rapport. We're going to do some planning around having an agenda and sharing a reference story. We'll talk about reference stories in a little bit, but the reference story is really there to indicate to the person that we're speaking to, say it's a retail business, that we've dealt with other retail businesses of their size, and we've dealt with other people in their role that we're speaking to, be it the CIO or operations or the CFO, doesn't matter who, that we've spoken to a similar person. And we've actually spoken to them about a business issue, and we've solved the business issue. So we show to them and we share with them how we help that company overcome a business issue. And for me, James, you know, I was always concerned, oh, if you get talking about business, then you need an MBA. Well, I've learned the following. Business is quite simple, actually. It's either things that are going up, things that are going down, or things around compliance. And let's talk about those things. So business drivers or business pain that's going to make someone act is that if my customer complaints were going up, then I'm going to act. If my calls to reset passwords were going up, I'm going to react because it's making my costs going up. You know, and business drivers that are going down, if my customer satisfaction was going down, if my profits were going down, if compliance was going down, that's going to make me react.
Sure, and I think it's important that we are Microsoft, that we're also in tune with what the local market demands. As we see the US market now slowly exiting out of and getting into a recovery, there's a lot of talk in the general Microsoft speak around growth, etc. Whereas the South African market is still not quite ready for growth. So it's about talking to them about business pains, about saving costs, about maintaining, about reacting, as you say, to governance aspects that they need to take care of. But it's also about preparing them for growth. We know that growth is around the corner. And it's going to be that business that has a well-oiled machine that can go out of the starting blocks and actually start building the business again when the economy has an upturn.
So it's that ability to scale quickly and provide business the agility to get going and to innovate. We've had a lot of discussion about, we might not be spending too much time doing innovation right now, maybe containing costs, but that's coming. It's around the corner.
Sure. Yeah.
So if we can do that, we're probably setting a great scene on how, and we built our credibility and we showed that we're reliable and we understand business. We refer to that as actually having some situational fluency, some situational knowledge of the client's environment. And then what we need to do, James, is think about some great probing questions. Now, I'm pretty sure you've worked with enough sales guys to know that we're not very good at asking probing sales questions. And in fact, it takes a little bit of thought. You don't just think about those questions in the car or in the elevator there. So in this whole Pitch Perfect process, we're going to look at some of the probing questions we can ask. And then we need to match that with capabilities. You know, one of the things I heard from a customer the other day is that they really don't want to have to figure out our capabilities themselves.
Sure.
You know, and they want us to tell them what's the right capability to address the right pain. They want us to do the diagnosis.
It's definitely our job to do the selling. I mean,
yeah.
I think we also come from a time period where it was easy. The customer knew that they had a specific requirement. They went and did the research, and you came in and signed the order. There's definitely a lot more selling going on at the moment, where you have to, as you say, prepare the questions, know who you're talking to, and know what capabilities you need to match. And I love the sort of thought pattern here about the role, because also sometimes we step into a conversation, we take the conversation very technically, very quickly, and you're only talking to one person in the room, if that person is even in the room.
Yeah.
So it's about knowing who you're talking to and what their role in the organization is, so that you can make sure that you're agile enough to highlight the capabilities that's relevant to that person.
Well, you're going to love the next tool I'm going to show in a little bit. It's like, and it shows you how to highlight the right tools and have the right discussions with the right people. So once we've actually matched our questions with the capabilities that we have, you know, this seems obvious, but you know, embarrassingly enough, I didn't do this, is that you could actually have a really great discussion with a customer, but you don't document that discussion. You go into another meeting, you get called into a conference call, and before you know it, it's a week later and you haven't fed back that great information. So I really urge that when you have these discussions with customers, put in a clear next steps plan with them. Make it explicit about what the next steps are going to be. And it could be something as simple as meeting with other people in the organization, setting up a demo, introducing them to a partner. But make sure that you summarize the meeting that you've had by identifying the pain that you're trying to address, show them the capabilities that you think Microsoft can provide, and then agreeing with the customer what the next step is going to be, and then emailing that to them. You know, one of the things that amazes me, if you could do that and the customer responds, then I know as a salesperson that the opportunity is qualified and it's worth spending more time on.
100%. It's also a great opportunity to challenge in a very subtle way, because often you walk into a room and you have a knowledgeable customer, but they may politely be missing some of the points that you're trying to bring across. So as you say, a summary mail is a great way to just challenge and say, as discussed, or you know, have you considered these aspects, to make sure that you reach a wider team, and also that you maybe catch that person when he's in a little bit of a downtime and he's reflecting back on the meeting, and he may be more open to considering other points.
Yeah, and I think it's also, I mean, you use the word challenge there. I think that if you've done a great job of asking questions and you can expose how big this problem is for them, and if they think of capabilities that are maybe not as best suited as ours are, we can challenge them on that and say, well, we've seen the downfalls and the pitfalls that you may be going down that route. You know, think about it this way. And again, thinking about Azure, it's really great to maybe just prove very quickly in spinning up some infrastructure for them that we can do what we can say.
Right.
Great. So that's the picture that we're going to use for Pitch Perfect. And we're going to keep this in mind as we go through. James, I don't think there's any industry that this is not applicable for. EMS is going to work across all industries. One of the things that I always think about with roles is that we tend to speak to the usual suspects in IT, you know, the CIO, and even if sometimes we can't even get there, but we tend to speak to the usual suspects. The thing that I love about this planning, and I'll show you some of the questions around that, is it maybe gives us an opportunity to speak to people that we've never typically spoken to before. So it gets us out of the IT department because we're thinking now a little bit bigger. And then likewise, we're going to think about the business pains, you know, what's increasing, what's decreasing. So I told you about that little tool that we have, and it's really just this a view of what the stakeholders are. Now, I had a look at the case study that we referred to later on as a retail, but they're probably going to have an HR manager, they're going to have someone who's in charge of risk, CIO, and a CFO. And these are some examples of the pains that they may experience in their daily life. So an HR manager, you know, there's an increase in the delays to decommission people that have been fired or moved on. That's going to keep them up at night. There could be a decrease in productivity. Even in employee morale, if you think about what you were saying is at that bank where you had to queue up for 2 days, I don't think that's going to lead to great internal customer satisfaction with your organization. So there's going to be lots of pains that we can address with EMS to even an HR manager. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think we're talking about retail. It's the staff turnover is notoriously high.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's your loss of productivity if you have a new employee that starts and they're on your books, but it's going to take you at least 2 or 3 weeks before they're productive? And then same, your sort of risk in trying to get them to stop accessing your systems, yeah. And that by that time they're working for the competition.
Yeah, and you can't let that happen. I was thinking also about what would be interesting to speak to a risk manager, because EMS is really suited to managing the security and making sure that you don't have those leaks, but really more from the point of compliance. We mentioned that earlier. You know, if that information was leaked out, what would that do to the reputation to the organization?
And I think here the selling job actually starts with trying to get the risk manager to be in the meeting.
Yes.
Because your typical risk manager at a retail store may be thinking about risks from a physical store perspective, about stock turnover, those type of things as risks to the business, and maybe not even considering IT risks. Yeah. Altogether.
You know, and that's a great point, because going back to if you're doing Picture Perfect correctly, and I said that one of the next steps could be to speak to someone else, that's a great opportunity to ask the CIO, you know, not only when you look at you know, your costs and how this is going to help you reduce costs, et cetera, but it's going to help you manage risk. Can you set up a meeting for me to go and speak to the risk manager? And it opens up this discussion for
Spot
us.
Spot on.
So CIO, you know, I think the pains here are pretty standard. You know, the whole issue around operating costs, the increase in generating more reports for the business about what are the vulnerability, what are the attacks, and is a decreased ability to scale as you bring on more and more software as a service into the business. As that becomes more available, as we spin up more apps, his ability to scale across that and the complexity must be at contributing to the increase in costs. And then I think it goes scales up all the way to the CFO. He's going to be thinking about, well, I'm spending all this money keeping my information secure, my profits are going down, I'm battling with cash flow because I'm using a lot of capex, and you know, his operating costs are going up. So there's many stakeholders that we can start these discussions with. Again, I go back to my reference story picture. We know there's an industry, we're going to target retail, go into the IT department, focus on the business pain. We've spoken about some of the capabilities in that storyboard earlier. I think the point that I also want to just highlight here is that we should back up our reference stories with some results. And we can allude to the fact that we've helped other customers achieve a return on investment or a cost saving. So if we don't actually have the exact numbers, we can allude to the fact that it's been a dramatic or significant increase or decrease. So I'm going to look at now this reference story that we have. It's Costco. It's a published reference story. Very large retail membership warehouse. I would imagine something like a Macro, something along those lines.
100%. Yes, and I think it's interesting when we look at results. We may be thinking about the day-to-day operations of this retail store, but there are many scenarios that we may want to focus on, just focusing on something like a store opening. Mm. If I think about your classical store opening, you're going to have scenarios where you're going to bring in a marketing team, shop fitting, maybe someone that needs to do, some partners that need to do the site investigation and the building and all of those things. So you have a short time frame in a project where you actually have a very big need for very controlled security, because you need to have all of these business partners come in and form part of your extended V team, and you want to very specifically want to, at the end of the project, again, exit them out of your organization.
Yeah, and you also want to be able to screen off certain parts of the data that they, you want them to see, and then information you don't want them to see. So, I mean, if you think about what happened at Costco, they actually, due to a SAP upgrade, they used to have just one credential for the entire warehouse. But then with the upgrade, they actually had to have lots of separate identities and credentials for all the employees. They had 170,000 employees. So they needed a single sign-on, not just for the on-premise and for the SAP, but for Google Apps and some of their homegrown software as a service, and obviously SAP. They also required MFA, and they need to provision and deprovision people. This is the one thing that also amazed me, is that they were spending nearly $6 million a year doing password resets. I mean, that's quite something.
And I mean, that is time that your help desk could be really be more productive and actually teaching employees how to use the systems better or on other value-adding tasks than simply to click a button.
Yeah, so they looked at, with the help of Microsoft, they called it the One Costco, and that was just using Azure Active Directory Premium as a single sign-on for all their 170,000 employees, doesn't matter whether it was on-site or off-site, and to install MFA, multi-factor authentication, so any employee could use it on any device. And then they also looked at integrating and using that with infrastructure as a service to get new warehouses up and running more quickly. So they were almost killing two birds with one stone there.
Spot on. I mean, again, as we said, you know, you don't want to now, in your store opening or in your new branch opening, have a delay because of IT.
Yeah.
And you have to get that store, you have to get those people to be productive almost at a higher rate than the rest of your organization. So it's important that they get on board very quickly.
So looking at the benefits or the results that we wanted to, and if we're using this as a reference story for another retail customer, they had operating cost savings of nearly $10 million per year. That's pretty impressive.
Staggering.
Which with a potential of $30 million, which was nearly 70-80% cost reduction. I'm always a little bit nervous when I hear 70 or 80%. I know most businesses would jump at 30. So, you know, we could tailor that down and still have a hell of a result. The thing that was most impressive is a 1.5-month return on the investment. I mean, that's probably the quickest return I've ever heard on a project like this.
Sure.
And then, you know, better user experience, single sign-on. They were able to rapidly handle the expansion across the globe and secure connectivity and predictable bandwidth and latency. Something I never thought about, but that obviously predictability, consistency comes into this as well.
100%. Again, with that sort of multi-site rollout, you get those scenarios where a new employee may be able to log on from one site because that Active Directory is synced, but moving into another branch, they have some difficulty reaching the network, and that creates calls to your help desk, that creates complexity, etc., that you just simply want to avoid.
Yeah, so it starts all over again. So I think this is a great case study. If I was calling on any retail company, I'd be using this as a way to demonstrate that we've helped other organizations in the retail space overcome a significant challenge around single sign-on. Some of the probing questions that tie directly into that I thought about, and let's run through them together, James, is, you know, one of the probing questions we could ask is, how do you control user access for enterprise and software as a service applications? How will your current asset management scale to serve ever-growing numbers of software as a service? Because that's only going to go get bigger. I don't think it's going to get smaller used by your company. So directly related back to the Costco, I mean, you can have Active Directory Premier to manage all user identity, on-premise, all software as a service for over 800 apps. And then you can use your already investments in on-premise AD to have your corporate credentials accessed for software as a service.
Sure. And I mean, again, there's that odd scenario where you don't know as a user whether you have access to the system or not, or whether it's your password that's not working or not, or whether you've been provisioned or not. So you sometimes go into a little bit of limbo of asking the wrong question to help desk. So you may be asking for access to the system when it's actually just a password or little things like that. And it wastes time.
Absolutely,
great to get to the knowledge that my password works on system X and therefore it should be working on system Y.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
And I love that. I mean, this the single sign-on just makes sense from the get-go. You know, another great question, and this is really going to unpack that, that reporting capability we have, but, you know, how do they track and respond to inconsistencies and activities across their third-party applications, specifically from different advisors? And that's that machine learning reports we spoke about earlier. So with the Azure Active Directory, you get detailed reports on vulnerabilities, et cetera.
Yeah, and great. I mean, earlier we spoke about that scenario where a phone gets lost or stolen, and you want to actually monitor and know whether that phone is still trying
to
access your network. You know, if you can reach out and cut it off, great. But in other scenarios, it may be good enough just to know that it's still active and out there. A lot of organizations want to maybe trace it and find out where it's gone.
I like the way you think. You know, another great probing question is asking them how they provision that additional layer of authentication, you know, alluding to the fact that MFA is built in to EMS. So asking the customer how they do that layer of authentication, you know, is it because of security? Is it because of compliance? How does it improve access control? You know, and the capability we have is MFA out the box, across mobile apps, phones, whatever it may be. So
just to unpack MFA, I mean, that's the ability for the system to challenge your cell phone. I mean, like we see in a lot of the banking applications, where if I do something,
I need to
first respond to the SMS, which proves that I am the user and I have physical access to the device as well.
Yes. I think and you know what's interesting, as a user, I feel really confident when I get that SMS from my bank and I get that code and I put it in. I actually feel really confident that's working. So I'm hoping my bank is using Microsoft's MFA to do that via EMS. And then finally, you know, that whole question about how do you decommission someone when you're leaving? So how do you make sure that employees leaving the information no longer have access to your enterprise or your SaaS applications? You know, with the capabilities straight out of EMS, quickly decommission users, then you make sure they no longer have access to those applications.
Yeah, spot on. And I mean, the way that we were thinking about this maybe 15 years ago, it would have been that user is consuming a license and I want to stop the license consumption. But really, the focus on data is so much greater.
Yeah. So I think, you know, with that reference story tying in some of these questions, you know, we should be able to have a great discussion. Unpack some of the problems. If we have some positive response to these probing questions, we can back it up with our capabilities. And this starts me down the road of having a qualified opportunity. I'm going to summarize this discussion. I'm going to talk about how we reduce the cost for a retail business using EMS and trying to get to next steps, whether it's a proof of concept or even meeting someone else in the business. Send this also off as a formal email and use that as a process to get this qualified opportunity going.
Spot on. And with this being based on Azure, there's also that immediacy in my POC. It's not going to take me weeks and weeks to roll it out. It's software as a service. So it's a question of having my POC started very quickly and being able to show the customer real value very quickly in that POC.
Yeah, because there's no more excuses is what you're saying, James.
Spot on.
Okay, lovely. Thank you. So finally, just to wrap everything up, you know, we've Legit Smart Solutions have kindly provided a roadmap of all the additional resources that are out there. Obviously, the Virtual Academy, Microsoft's Virtual Academy, which this is part of. You'll see the video that will be posted there. There'll be additional instructor-led information, tools, additional videos, ebooks, virtual labs, and so it goes. So if you need to know anything more about Azure, it's all here. James, thank you for doing this with me. I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and I really know a lot more about EMS now, so thank you for that.
Thank you, and thank you for watching.